Mark McKenna, who is the author of a document called The Moment of Truth, History and Australia's Future. It's a very good morning to you, Mark, and thanks for joining us on Morning Focus.
Pleasure to be there.
Look, just to quote some of your words, in this inspiring new quarterly essay, you consider the role of history in making and unmaking the nation, and you argue that after nearly 50 years of deeply divisive debate over the country's foundation and its legacy for Indigenous Australia, we stand at the crossroads, and Australia says it's on the brink of momentous change only if its citizens and politicians can come to terms with the past. So that's a pretty profound statement. What brought you to that point?
Well, I guess a lifetime's work in as a historian, writing about Aboriginal history and frontier history and Australian history generally. And also, I guess, like a lot of other people, I was dismayed by the rejection of the Uluru Statement. And when you think about the fact that the last significant constitutional change for Aboriginal people was 1967, that 51 years ago in May, and, you know, it's extraordinary, in a sense, how patient they've been and how slow we have been, really, to genuinely listen and genuinely negotiate with Aboriginal people as equals. So I guess the essay is me as a non-Indigenous Australian, as a historian, trying to put this back on the table. I mean, trying to put it back in the centre of debate and show how important it is to listen carefully to what the Uluru Statement was asking for. And, for example, you know, one of the things that it was asking for was a Truth and Reconciliation Commission, a Makarrata. So that, in you know, the discussion around the Uluru Statement when it first came out and after the government rejected it, the government said nothing about the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, and there was very little discussion of that recommendation, and I'm trying to pull that back into view, I guess.
Mark, what has attracted you to this area, though? It's not a popular thing to be involved in, you know.
Somewhat, no, I can think of a lot more popular things.
To devote part of your life, as you have done, to this particular area where, in many cases, nobody really wants to listen. So what has attracted you to this area?
I think, that's a good question. Personal friendships on some level. You know, I knew Gatchal Jakura quite well, who was former chair of ATSIC, and he died in 2004. But he always impressed the play. He inspired me, I guess, to keep, you know, remembering that change in this country is a very slow thing, and you have to keep getting out there and keep pushing the issues before the public and also before our politicians, of course, who are responsible for legislating change. So I guess, and I think there's also a lot of goodwill. You're right what you say, that that it's not a popular issue, but there is a lot of goodwill out there towards Aboriginal Australians. I guess this essay is an attempt to kind of you know, to create some sense of momentum, even if it's just discussion, because already the Uluru, or the, you know, question of constitutional recognition has gone on the back burner. There's yet another committee which won't report until November. So we've managed to put this debate again on the back burner, and it's been years that we've been now trying to work through this, and we still haven't managed to really find a way of breaking through. So I guess I see my essay as a contribution to that effort. Yeah.
I once saw a man that put himself through university, and on his graduation he undid his flash white shirt and tie and everything, and underneath was a T-shirt that read, "Beware, Educated Black Man." And and I quite often wonder what it is about governments that they keep stalling the process. They keep putting it on the back burner, as you say, and it's happened government after government. I mean, it's not just a Liberal Labor thing.
Oh, no.
I mean, Bob, we had Bob Hawke, you know, promising a treaty. You know,
well,
and it's a disgrace. That's the only way you can describe the treatment of the First Nations people over a long, long period of time. What is it, yep, do you think, that frightens governments about Indigenous people? What's the fright factor, you could say?
Okay, the fright factor. Well, I guess Mabo was a good indication of that fright factor. If you look at the original, like the first sort of couple of months' response to the Mabo decision,
yeah,
you can see a lot of fear in the community, ungrounded fears about, you know, that they were going to lose all their land, ironically.
Oh, your backyard. Yeah, your backyard right, was going. Backyard. It was guaranteed. It was through the media like wildfire, wasn't it, you know?
Yeah. So that there's, and I think also the fear comes out of the fact that deep down we know that the country was taken illegitimately. We know that there were no treaties, or well, we should know, we don't know that. There were no treaties signed. The land was taken without consent, without compensation. So that knowledge, I think, after the, you know, over the last 50 years of historians writing on the frontier, that knowledge has started to seep through into the wider community. And I think that, you know, at a base level, that knowledge creates a fear because they know that it was taken illegitimately, and in a way they're uncomfortable with addressing that fact. And we have to address it. We have to. I mean, one of the things that Aboriginal people said in the Referendum Council report was that they wanted Australians to listen to them tell their stories of the frontier and dispossession. That hasn't been done. They wanted a Truth and Reconciliation Commission so they can stand and tell those stories. And of course, it isn't only Aboriginal Australians who've got those memories, those oral histories. It's also, you know, white Australians, because many pastoral families and their descendants also have those stories in their own oral history. So, you know, there's a deep awareness, I think, at gut level, that this is something that if we don't address it, we can't really find a way to establish a legitimacy about our own nation unless we address the truth of our history.
Education. I mean, much of non-Indigenous children's path through the education system, you know, the true story that hasn't been told for many generations of people, so they're not getting educated at the school level.
No.
And it's only through education that what amazes me is the number of people from overseas that come to this country that have an amazing understanding of the events of this country and the history of this country that our own non-Indigenous Australians have got no idea about. And they'll come armed with this fact and that fact and another fact. And, it doesn't matter whether they're from Germany or where they're from. You know, young backpackers with a vast knowledge of what's happened in this country. And I quite often shake my head and wonder, why aren't our own have this knowledge in their minds? I haven't got an answer for that.
It's a very good question. I mean, I remember myself living in Germany in my 20s, in the 1980s, being struck by how many people would ask me about, many German people would ask me about Aboriginal, Indigenous Australia. And it struck me that they were asking me more, they wanted to know more, than a lot of my Australian friends.
Yeah.
I think that I'm almost optimistic that this is changing. I mean, the big journey we're on is that for most of our history, we have imagined Aboriginal Australia as something that would either die out or that would be simply superseded or move into the dustbin of history. Now, what has happened is that the very history that we thought would be extinguished, the very culture that we thought, white Australia thought, would be extinguished, is now really coming to be seen slowly as the centre, at the centre, at the heart of the country's identity. And that's the big, that is the big journey we're on, and that is what, in part, the essay is trying to explain and trying to show why we're, why we need to move towards truth-telling, why we need to recognise the Uluru Statement, pay it more heed, and why we need to really try and find a way to resolve a lot of the very polarised way that we've talked about history in the last 50 years. You know, the 1980s, we were talking about invasion or settlement. The 1990s, we were wondering whether we should apologise to the stolen generation. 2000s, we had the history wars. Recently, we've been debating over statues and colonial statues and Australia Day. So it goes on, this debate. And this is where a truth-telling commission can help resolve some of those, some of the rush, or get us out of that kind of crude choice between shame and pride that we always seem to box ourselves into.
What's it going to take to get a treaty at some point in the future? Is it going to go back to protesters, you know, by the tens of thousands on the street? Does it happen online with the electronic media, a combination of both? What actually, you know, not only gets a government to take notice, but actually for the very first time in a long time, well, since 67, to be quite, as you said, gets somebody to do something, you know. Everybody hides it in a back cupboard. We'll have a little yarn about that later, or you know, sooner or later it'll go away, and eventually, you know, government after government has gone down this same track. So in your view, what's it going to take to get that treaty signed off?
Well, first thing, as you know, I'm sure, there are treaties being signed on a state level and a regional level across the country.
That's
in various
right.
different ways, you know.
Yeah.
But I think that the federal government has a particular responsibility because of what it is. It's our national government, and so it's got a particular potential that no other government has, which is why that treaty is so important at a federal level, and why Hawke's failure to commit to that treaty promise is, you know, so unfortunate. What it's going to take is that we need a political leadership that will go out day after day and put this issue out there, not just go to the Garma Festival and, you know, say a few nice words and then come back and forget about it. It has to be there every day, every week of our federal, national, political agenda. It needs a leader who can commit to it. And it'd be nice to think that that could be two political leaders, a bipartisan affair. But we've seen that the dream, if you like, of bipartisanship came to an end, I think, when the government rejected that Uluru Statement, which, as you know, had come out of months and months of dialogue and negotiation around the country. And it's not that every Indigenous person in Australia agreed with it. You know, some thought it was too weak. Others thought they weren't sure about whether it was the right way, but still it was the consensus position. It was what came out of the process. And to see it dismissed in such a way, I think, was so unfortunate, because it suggested that Australia had learnt nothing in the way that we should be negotiating with Aboriginal people. So I don't know if that's an optimistic or a pessimistic answer, but look, it's something I believe that will happen, but we have to see a greater sense of urgency. We have to, in our political leaders, to really put this at the heart of our national debate.
So as old ones retire and new ones come in, we hit them right fair between the eyes with a silver bullet.
That's
and
right.
And
that's
say, look, this is high on the agenda. You know, you may think this is important for Australia, but this is what we're thinking. So through media and through whatever other means possible, the social media as well, get it up and going. I mean, they had a fairly successful recognizer campaign. Maybe they need to be now looking at a treaty campaign and getting that doing the rounds, because, at the moment.
That's right.
It needs maybe a combination of both, feet on the ground in protest, and also use the advantages of what they are with social media. Look, I'd like to thank you for your part in all of this.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's something that is, you know, who knows whether we'll see it in our lifetime or thereafter, but it's something in the making, it's in the process, and whoever contributes every little tiny bit along the way in like little specks of gold. So thank you.
No, I really appreciate the discussion and your interest, and we'll get there.
Thank you so much, Mark McKenna. That's taken from a publication called Quarterly Essay.